Would you like for us to post information about your congregation on the Find a Church page of our website? We'll add your church when it becomes part of the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your church's mission or advertising budget. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 at issuesetc.org. Click support and publicize your congregation to the world.
I'm not a real religious person, but I'm somewhat religious. And I'm just wondering if God's telling us he doesn't want us to drill offshore because it sure is setting back offshore drilling.
I understand totally what George thinks and what other people think about marriage being between a man and a woman. And it's a real reversal, really, to accept gay marriage.
But you do.
But I think we could, yeah.
You ever heard the expression, someone's so heavenly minded they're of no earthly good? I always think that's such a bogus thing. It's the other way around. If you're heavenly minded, for the first time, you actually become of some earthly good.
Washington jet drivers love Issues Etc.
It is hard to deny that there is something changing about the way all of us are communicating, the way of all of us remaining connected with one another. It used to be the occasional long-distance phone call and a letter. It was not expected that there would be daily communication, that there would be constant communication. And now it is. For most of us, and especially for our kids who find the need to be connected with one another, with us, and with the whole world, just like the rest of us do. And yet, one must wonder, if you're out in the business world, you need to contact an important business contact. It's great to have a cell phone, a smartphone, all of those things, constant connection to the internet. Our children may need this on occasion, but our children are those probably most affected by the impact of this kind of technology and this kind of communication. We're going to be talking about the impact of all this new technology on teens. Dr. Meg Meeker will join us here in just a few minutes. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. coming to you live this Wednesday, May the 26th. We'll start out talking about technology in our teens, a little sermon review a little later in this first hour, a sermon from Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Hope Lutheran Church in Aurora, Colorado on Pentecost. Brigitte Gabriel will join us in the second hour to talk about the proposed building of a mosque at Ground Zero. When I first read the story, I thought it had to be a joke, but apparently it isn't. And then we'll round off today's program, part two of a three-part daily series on man's failed attempts to reach God. Today, rationalism, doing it with your mind. Dr. Stephen Hind will be our guest. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943. You can email us right here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. Before we talk to Dr. Meg Meeker, here's a recent story from CBS News about the influence of modern technology on our teens.
When I don't have my phone, I feel like I'm not going to make it through the day.
Generation Z, nicknamed digital natives, average more than 7 hours a day using electronic media.
I text every day. I don't even call people anymore.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like 100 times this day. It's insane. Yeah. What happened?
These ninth graders are pretty tech savvy, but even they admit they are sometimes exposed to too much.
When were you first in the know about sexting?
A friend of mine was... She actually became like a sexter.
And what does that mean?
Like she was sending inappropriate pictures of herself. Once that's out there, that's something that can spread.
And spread it does, especially on the internet, where schoolyard gossip quickly leads to confrontation.
Cyberbullying, how prevalent is that?
Oh my God.
That's awesome.
Very.
Oh my God, every day.
Every day?
It's like every day.
It's like FormSpring.
FormSpring is a new social networking site where kids can post anonymous comments, a public bulletin board that can be less than friendly.
Everybody knows everybody's business. You can ask the person, oh, how many times have you had sex with this person? Did you ever hook up with that person? And then by the time you come back to school, everybody's like, oh, yeah, I saw your FormSpring. What happened? And then people start crying and gets in a whole fight.
The controversial site made headlines earlier this year.
Police are investigating vicious internet postings.
When it was linked to a teen suicide.
Everything you guys are dealing with here at high school, what do you think about those kids coming up behind you?
I think that they really have no idea what they're in store for.
But these freshmen may be surprised to hear what middle school students already have to say.
Raise your hand if you have a cell phone. Text message every day. Online every day. How many of you think technology has forced you to grow up faster?
Yeah.
In what way?
I think that if like technology now, it makes you experience stuff faster than you would normally, and that makes you more mature.
More experienced, perhaps, but more mature.
So let me tell you what the Obama kids are allowed and not allowed to do. They get no computers on weekdays, no phones, no television during the week.
That is torture. That's torture. I have to have a life too.
Well, my dad usually says that you can't go on you can only go on the computer for 1 hour or something like that a day. But sometimes I don't really listen to it that much.
So you slip it in.
Yes, yeah, sometimes.
We all hide something from our parents.
Of course.
Oh, parents watching this.
People make secret Facebook accounts, and if their parents are online, they can't find them anyway because they use different names.
Who has a secret Facebook account? Malia? And your parents don't know?
Everybody has one. I want one.
But what kids want and when they should be exposed to technology is still up for debate.
I don't know about younger guys. I don't know if it's very good for them.
But you as an eighth grader, you could handle it.
I guess we could handle it because we're a little more mature and we've been exposed to that once.
Would your parents agree with you on that?
I don't think so.
That story from CBS News. Joining us to talk about the impact of technology on teens, Dr. Meg Meeker. She's a pediatrician, mother, and author of 6 best-selling books, including Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. Dr. Meeker, welcome back.
Oh, thanks for having me so much.
Some might say this is unavoidable. The technology is now ubiquitous and to many indispensable, even for the kind of kids we heard from that CBS story, middle school, junior high, and high school kids. What's your response?
Well, you know, and I hear this all the time, and, you know, one of the things I was struck with in the story is the number of kids who said, you know, we can handle it, we are mature, and that should be a huge red flag to parents to start to say, no, we can't handle it, we're not mature. You know, it is here to stay, cell phones and iPods and computers and laptops, but the problem for a lot of kids is it's way too much input, too many avenues through which people can hurt them. And, you know, it is a very serious issue, you know, on many different levels. First of all, emotionally, this is very hard for kids. When kids get bullied over the internet or on their cell phones, people say things or they read things about themselves. It hurts them in a way that it might not hurt us because we are the mature ones. Secondly, cognitively, kids are not able to handle a lot of stuff that adults are able to handle. And, you know, I really am worried about this in a lot of ways because it is very damaging for kids. But I think as parents, what we need to know is a lot of this is out there. We just need to really step it up and make sure, to the best of our ability, we know what's going on with our kids. And we really do need to take some steps to curb a lot of their exposure to some of this stuff.
So where would you begin? I mean, if you had to identify an avenue, because the technology itself is, yes, the technology changes the way we communicate, but the cell phone and the smartphone, it's the technology. What avenue would you begin with to kind of do the best job of protecting our kids from the kind of exposure, from the kind of environment they're going to encounter through it?
What is a great question. As a parent and a pediatrician, I mean, this is what I do every day. First of all, I had a hard and fast rule with our kids could not have laptops till they went to college. That was just the way it is in our family. And I think that parents need to have family rules. particularly if they have more than one child, because it's hard to tell just one kid in your family, no, you can't have a laptop, but Susie can. The reason I say laptops is because kids can take a laptop anywhere they want. They can go off into the family room, to the bedroom, and they can see whatever they want. Have one family computer and have it in a public place. You know, if you have it near your kitchen, and if you're sitting there cooking dinner, Johnny's much less likely to run into porn or run into some bad stuff while he knows mom is right around the corner. So that's just a real protective thing for kids. Second of all, I feel strongly that kids shouldn't have cell phones until they're much older. You know, high school. Now, some people say, oh, that's ridiculous. There's no reason in the world that a third, fourth, or fifth grade kids need a cell phone. And so I was pretty strict about that with our kids. And I want to tell parents one thing. You know, kids will hoot and holler and complain and scream and wail about not being able to have something, but that will only last for a little bit, and then it goes away. So I think that if you can really limit the availability of some of these things, can they go on the computer? Sure. But they need to be, you know, you need to be right around the corner and sort of watch what they're doing. And, you know, and in a cell phone, just restrict the usage and the age at which they can get them. And I think those things alone really will help cut out a whole lot of the nonsense that's coming through to our kids.
So, in other words, restrict access to the technology itself to begin with.
Absolutely, because we can't, kids aren't able, once they have the technology in their hands, they're not able to resist the temptation or to discipline themselves to steer away from certain things. That's our job. And because kids just can't do it. No 14-year-old boy in his room alone with a laptop night after night is going to be able to resist some temptations to go and look at stuff he's not supposed to be looking at.
Well, let's take a break right there. When we come back, I want to pick up on that subject. We're talking about the impact of technology on our teens. Dr. Meg Meeker is our guest. This is Issues Etc. live this Wednesday afternoon, May the 26th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Talk back at issuesetc.org or Twitter us at issuesetc. Stay tuned.
Thanks for sending us your email. Having produced Issues Etc. for more than 15 years, I can tell you that we've never received email response like this. Unfortunately, we simply can't reply to all of your email. So here's a way that I can almost guarantee a response to your question or comment. Call the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8384. It's available for your questions or comments 24/7, 618-223-8384.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology, and we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Thanks to God's gift of the Internet, people are listening to Issues Etc. around the world.
Hi, this is Ville calling from Finland. I believe the day will come when you cannot enter the office as a pastor in the ELCA unless you subscribe to the ordination of gays and lesbians. And why do I believe that? Because Americans are sinners like we Finns are.
Listen to what you want, when you want, wherever you are. IssuesETC.org.
Well, Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the impact of all this technology on our teens, and there's no doubt about it. It is having an impact. Some of it can be positive, but much of it is so negative. Meg, before the break, you were talking essentially about impulse control, the inability of children before a certain age due to emotional maturity to really control impulses when it comes to a knowledge of what's out there and available to them so readily on the internet through these other avenues.
Absolutely. And they really don't, regardless how mature a parent thinks a child is at 14, 15, 16, even 18, we can't be fooled because they don't have the impulse control and the self-regulation that an adult does. They don't have it from an emotional standpoint, and they don't have it from a brain standpoint. They just don't have the brain development to be able to self-regulate. That's why I think it's really important for parents to just be very matter-of-fact. Don't make this a personal issue. You know, don't say, I'm sorry all your friends have a laptop, but you don't have a laptop because, you know, you're just not mature enough to handle it. Just say, you know, that's just the way we do things here. My job as mom or dad is to keep you away from temptation that's just going to be too much for you. That's what I do with myself. I avoid temptation. I'm helping you avoid temptation. And that's what we can do. And laptops and televisions in the bedroom are a big no-no. And unfortunately, a lot of parents let their kids do it. They think, you know, they're mature, they can handle it. But even if they are pretty mature, bottom line is it changes kids. Watching too much nonsense on television or the laptops, it you know, too much violence for boys in particular, it changes their character. It changes them emotionally. And I think it really, really needs to be avoided.
Let's talk about the change that it works not only in our children but also in us adults, having to do with our need to constantly and instantaneously remain in contact with one another. The patience factor goes to zero in some cases. The need to communicate back and forth, get an answer or something along those lines.
Right. You know, it really we've seen a lot of anxiety in general, in the general population, go way up in the past 10 years. And I think a lot of it is due to this very fact. We want to know, we want our answers now. If we don't get our answers now, we get very frustrated. And everything in us is speeding up. And the availability and access to so many facts and so much information through technology has led us to this point where you can Google anything and find an answer. It's going to be the right answer. Who knows? You know, if it's on the internet, probably not, but, you know, it may. But that really, I believe, in the end, leads not to having more knowledge quicker that's going to edify us and help us. In fact, it's just going to frustrate us more and cause us more anxiety because, you know, around the next corner is just one more thing we need to know, one more thing we need to do. We get very demanding of other people. We get very demanding of ourselves. We get very short-tempered because we want turnover of many things to be very, very quick.
Meg, I was recently helping my daughter, who's a freshman in college, go through some papers, in particular some work with some fellow students, written work. And I was never a great speller myself. I've improved with time. You know, it's taken almost 50 years. But I was struck at how poorly the children, I shouldn't say children, these college students wrote.
Right.
Not only in the mechanics of it, the grammar, the syntax, the spelling, but just putting a single thought together into what could be remotely called a sentence. And I was talking it over with my producer. He said, it's because these kids do nothing but text, and they don't actually spell words or complete thoughts any longer. What do you think of that analysis?
Oh, absolutely. But you know, but you're really addressing a problem on it that really is a problem on two different levels. You know, first of all, grammatically, it's a nightmare. Kids put IM abbreviated language in papers. I have a friend that teaches AP English in Chicago, and she said in these advanced placement papers that these kids are turning in, are, you know, GTG and OMG, you know, and these kids really think that this is acceptable language. But secondly, and I think it's a more serious issue, is that I believe with instant answers and very abbreviated conversations. We're developing a generation of kids who are not trained to think. They're not trained to start at point A and arrive at point B, C, or D through, you know, a logical progression of thought. Do they learn how to debate? Do they learn how to think more deeply? Do they learn how to critically analyze things? Do they understand logic? I would love to see logic taught in college classes, how to critically assess something and to think. Because you really can't write well, A, if you don't have the good grammar, but B, if you don't know how to construct an argument, think logically, and think on a much deeper level. That takes time. It takes a lot of patience. And many times it takes a student or a child interacting with another person and dialoguing. You know, the great, you know, if you look at a lot of the great writers in centuries past, these were people who conversed and debated a lot. They had a lot of time in meeting places, or at least at a dinner time conversations, where they really debated issues and talked about things. And we don't do that anymore. That's why I think that we have kids who aren't necessarily terrific writers.
And what about in the area of being able to simply carry on a conversation? I noticed in the CBS News story, several of the kids said, I don't call anybody anymore. I just text.
They just text, right. It drives me crazy. A couple of different things. Kids don't dialogue face-to-face. Yes, they're in contact with one another more, and it's great. You know, my daughter lives in Indonesia right now. She's teaching. It's great because I have Skype, so I'm very, very grateful for that. However, nothing replaces face-to-face conversation with another person. If you can't converse face-to-face, see a person's facial reactions, see their, you know, emotions in their face, at least to dialogue over the phone, you can hear the inflection in their voice. You can hear anger. You can hear sadness. None of that comes through with texting. And I think that this is why when we think about bullying with kids, bullying has always been around. However, it's taken on a bigger bite. It's more vicious than ever before because of the anonymity factor. Kids can text things or type things through Facebook or through a cell phone that they would never, ever say to a person's face. And that's why I think that the bullying has become more vicious, because more vicious language comes across in words that are in type format that would never come across if they had to say them out loud.
In the story, we heard the reporter suggest to the group of middle school kids that President Obama, with his two young daughters, severely restricts their access to the technology. I can understand why, as daughters of the president, it is very wise to do something like that. But talk to parents who aren't president of the United States or first lady of the United States. How would you make the case to them to follow that example and restrict the technology for their own kids' good?
Yeah. Well, I think that our kids deserve nothing less. And I think that what kids really need now to learn to develop some very important character skills, discipline, they need to learn concentration, they need to learn to think. That happens through reading and through dialoguing with other people. They need to learn to read books, to really increase their focus, their attention span, their intellect, their vocabulary. Nothing replaces reading books. The more time a child spends, even an adult college student spends on the internet or, you know, watching television, they're decreasing their attention span. They're really hurting their ability to be literate and to learn how to write and to think critically. In addition to that, particularly with boys, because boys are very visually oriented and they get addicted, if you will, to a lot of the video games and computer games very quickly. All of these games and so much on the internet is infused with hypersexual messages and hyperviolent messages, and these, of course, are terribly, terribly harmful to the development of even young adults. So restricting access, you'll never regret it. Indulging kids and letting them have free rein with their computers and you know, the video games only goes, it never takes them to any place good. It can only take them to very bad places, as far as I'm concerned. So any parent will never, ever regret restricting the use of many of these devices. And it's not that hard. You know, parents really feel, oh, I'm a terrible parent, but Johnny, everybody in Johnny's class has all these things. They have their cell phones. They have this. I'm a bad parent if I don't provide it for my kids. Really, on the contrary, you're a much better parent restricting and limiting. He has a lifetime to have as many cell phones as he wants, iPhones, you know, laptops and so forth. But it's a real great gift to your kids to restrict their access to these things.
Dr. Meg Meeker is a pediatrician, a mother, and author of 6 best-selling books, including Boys Should Be Boys, 7 Secrets to Raising Healthy Sons. You can purchase Boys Should Be Boys at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Meeker, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Todd.
When we come back, it's time to do a little sermon review here on Issues Etc. It's Wednesday afternoon, May the 26th. We're coming off of the church's celebration of the day of Pentecost, now beginning the Pentecost season. So we'll review a Pentecost sermon preached by Pastor Brian Wolf Miller of Hope Lutheran Church in Aurora, Colorado. On the other side of this break, in hour two, Brigitte Gabriel will join us to talk about a proposed building of a mosque at Ground Zero, and we'll have part two of our 3-part daily series on man's failed attempts to reach God with Dr. Stephen Hine. Today, rationalism. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington; Grace Lutheran, McPherson, Kansas; St. Paul's Lutheran, Bridgeport, Nebraska; Our Savior Lutheran, Raleigh, North Carolina; St. Paul Lutheran, Hancock, Maryland; Messiah Lutheran, Keller, Texas; St. John's Lutheran, Maple Grove, Minnesota; Grace Lutheran, Parker, Colorado; and Our Redeemer Lutheran, Harrington, Kansas. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Rosanda Thomas is better known as Chili, one of the 1990s hip-hop trio called TLC. She was surprisingly frank during a recent interview about the grief she suffered after an abortion. Just as her singing career was beginning to take off, she felt pressured by circumstances to have the abortion, even though she didn't want one. Even though, in her heart, she knew it was the wrong thing to do. Rosanda acknowledged the abortion was one of her biggest mistakes, saying, "It broke my spirit. I cried almost every day for 9 years. She tried to fix the abortion by having a replacement child with the same father. This is common in post-abortive mothers, a desperate attempt to undo the death of her unborn child. Please pray for Rosanda and millions of hurting women like her."
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.